Order.
The week turned into a race against the clock for the government, keen to get its controversial health and safety reform bill passed before the House adjourned on Thursday evening. With another week's adjournment looming and the loss of a day's chamber time to questions, general debate and members' bills on Wednesday, government backbenchers were keen to put a cork in the opposition's filibuster before 10 on Tuesday night. After adding another 6 hours to the 8 they had piled up the previous week in the part-by-part debate on the bill with the House sitting as a committee, the opposition were keen to force the debate past the adjournment at 10 on Tuesday, thereby leaving the government the Hobson's choice of putting the House under urgency to complete the committee stage and the third reading debate together on Thursday.
Mr Chairman.
I move the question be now put.
Yes, order.
Accepting the call for a vote from National's Jonathan Young, with about 10 minutes to go, Assistant Speaker Lindsay Tish had heard enough.
We've canvassed quite widely the issues that have come quite, it's become quite repetitive on clauses 1 and 2.
They contain the bill's title and date of commencement, and are usually debated last, are fairly wide-ranging, and inevitably echo the main themes of the debate, as represented in this question for the Prime Minister John Key on Tuesday from Opposition Leader Andrew Little.
Given that ACC charges twice the levy on dairy farming that it does on lavender growing, why does he say that lavender growing is high risk, but dairy farming isn't?
Right, Honourable Speaker, Prime Minister.
If the test was one against the other, I'd probably tend to agree with the member, but the test isn't that. Lavender farming will be included in the other category. Government's going through a consultation of those, and they may well be taken out.
What a
hopeless government.
In questions to ministers and in the debate itself, the opposition exploited the anomalies created by classifying risk in various sectors and the exclusion of conventional farming from the need to have health and safety representatives in the workforce. They were in the raft of amendments that the government tabled at the start of the debate last week. Had the opposition looked more closely towards the back of that supplementary order paper, they might have found new material that would have carried their debate through into Thursday. Material that didn't surface until the final minutes of the third reading debate, when Labor's Shadow Attorney General, David Parker, questioned amendments protecting the secrecy of classified security information in court cases involving the new health and safety law.
Very late in the process, the government, at select committee, after submissions had been called and had closed, introduced some changes in respect of the way in which trials would be conducted where there was classified security information involved. Mr Speaker, the Law Society wasn't told about it, the Council of Civil Liberties wasn't told about it, and they were surprised when they found out about it.
David Parker said the Law Society had written to the Minister for Workplace Relations and Safety, Michael Woodhouse, last Friday, August the 21st.
They noted that this was, in their opinion, a breach of the New Zealand Bill of Rights. And I want to remind the House that the Bill of Rights at Section 25 says the minimum standards of criminal procedure include a right to a fair and public hearing by an independent and impartial court, the right to be present at trial, and that's abrogated in some circumstances by these provisions, and to present a defence, which is undermined by these provisions, and the right to examine the witnesses for the prosecution, all of which are absolutely basic rights.
And are set out in the Bill of Rights Act, which this week, coincidentally, celebrated the 25th anniversary of its enactment on August the 28th, 1990, and was also the subject of a briefing in one of the committee rooms on Wednesday morning, as Rhys Lyon reports.
The Law and Order Committee was briefed by officials from the Attorney General's Office on the relationship between the Bill of Rights Act and legislation implementing electronic monitoring of offenders. Attorney General's Office Senior Policy Advisor Michael Gill explained the role of the Attorney General's reports under Section 7 of the Act.
Section 7 requires the Attorney General to bring to the attention of the House any provision of a bill that appears to be inconsistent with the rights and freedoms affirmed in the Bill of Rights. This process is designed to ensure that decisions made by Parliament to limit fundamental rights and freedoms are not taken without its full knowledge and prior consideration. Parliament may, of course, decide to legislate in a manner inconsistent with the Bill of Rights, if it considers that the circumstances warrant it.
Attorney General's Office Policy Advisor Elise Daly Sadgrove outlined the findings of the Attorney General's report in relation to the Electronic Monitoring of Offenders legislation bill.
It found electronic monitoring limits three rights, so that's the freedom of movement, and also the rights against unreasonable search and seizure and double jeopardy.
A point Ms. Daly Sadgrove explained further.
So that's the right against double jeopardy, which basically prohibits offenders being punished twice for the same offending, or more than once for the same offending. So the breach in the extended supervision order regime occurs because extended supervision orders punish the offender over and above the initial sentence that was handed down and after that sentence has been determined.
Michael Gill outlined the two stages taken into account when considering possible breaches of the Bill of Rights Act.
Whether a right or freedom is limited, and if so, is it justifiable? So concepts which are generally used to justify limitations of rights are things along the lines of protecting public safety. In other contexts, things like the need to maintain security of borders, all sorts of various things that you go through. The fact that a Section 7 report was issued indicates that in this context, the part of the electronic monitoring regime which interacts with the extended supervision order regime was considered not justifiable.
Attorney General's Office Senior Policy Advisor Michael Gill with that briefing to the Law and Order Committee.
Rhys Lyon. Back in the chamber, David Parker wound up his criticism of the Attorney General, Christopher Finlayson, who's also the minister in charge of the two spy agencies, the SIS and the GCSB.
For the attorney then to criticise the Law Society that they were somehow misinformed and they were getting it wrong is in my opinion, beyond the pale, and I don't think the attorney should have said those things, sir. This is an inappropriate breach of the Bill of Rights, of the ability of people to have a fair trial, and I don't think we in this Parliament have properly protected that fundamental interest. Mr. Speaker, it's wrong. It applies to the police, not just the SIS, not just the GSB. This is far too broad. It's wrong in principle. I can't see how it can ever be justified in respect of a health and safety reform bill.
Labour's Shadow Attorney General David Parker, who was followed by the final government speaker in the third reading debate.
Dr. Pamjit Pama.
Mr. Speaker, this is a great bill and I support this bill and commend the bill to the House.
And with that brief contribution, the government's health and safety reform legislation, split into five separate bills, passed its third and final reading with just a few minutes left before Thursday's adjournment at 6. The Murray Party Act and United Future adding their four votes to National's 59 to give the government a majority of 63 to defeat the 58 of all other parties combined. Although Pamjit Palmer's five-second speech was by far the shortest, she was not the only government speaker who didn't take their full 10 minutes available to them after the government lost another hour and a half following this announcement at the end of Thursday's questions from the Speaker, David Carter.
I have received a letter from Carmel Cipollone seeking to debate Understanding Order 389, the State of Care 2015 report on child, youth and family from the Office of the Children's Commissioner. The report deals with child, youth and family, which is the service arm of the Ministry of Social Development. The report raises many very serious concerns about the care of vulnerable children by the state. It recommends significant changes to improve outcomes for children. Having carefully considered this application and read the report, I believe it does require the urgent attention of the House.
The debate was then led off by Carmel Cipollone's caucus colleague, Labour's spokeswoman on children, Jacinda Ardern.
Mr. Speaker, the report that we have before us today is an absolute indictment, and it is only right that this House gives its time and consideration to what can only be considered some of the most important issues that we have a responsibility to address as members of this Parliament.
And among questions for the Minister of Social Development on Thursday was this one from Carmel Cipollone.
Does she agree with the statement by the Children's Commissioner that we don't know if children are better off as a result of state intervention, but the indications are not good?
The Honourable Anne Tolley.
Mr. Speaker, yes, I have been concerned at the lack of data that tracks children through and beyond state care. And that is why in April I appointed an expert panel to lead a complete overhaul of New Zealand's child protection system to ensure that we get better results for children in care and to ensure that money is invested in the areas that will make the biggest difference for those children.
The Minister for Social Development, Anne Tolley. As well as the government's loss of chamber time to that urgent debate on Thursday, Wednesday's question time was followed by the general debate, in which the United Future member for Ohario, Peter Dunn, used his 5 minutes to launch a fierce attack on the New Zealand Transport Agency, the NZTA.
We do have an agency here that, in my view, is now out of control.
Mr Dunn urged Transport Minister Simon Bridges to take the opportunity to restructure the NZTA.
Mr Speaker, it may be coincidental, but I note that the chief executive of the organisation has resigned effective from the end of the year. I want to say to the minister that I think this creates an opportunity to restructure the NZTA, to make sure it becomes far less of an arrogant, we know best organisation that works closely with the local authorities and the people that it represents and serves, and implements solutions that meet the community's needs, not the aspirations of the engineers within the NZTA. And I think, sir, that the opportunity will be there with a new chief executive for a change of direction. And in the interests of a number of communities around New Zealand, I urge the minister to take that course.
United Future's Peter Dunn in Wednesday's general debate, which was followed by the second and third readings of a members bill from the leader of the other one-man party, the ACT member for Epsom, David Seymour. His bill enabling bars and clubs to open all hours during the Rugby World Cup matches had been reported back from the Justice and Electoral Committee after being tabled in the chamber 2 weeks ago, bypassing the members' ballot. The committee spent some 8 hours behind closed doors discussing the bill and the approximately 120 submissions, all but a handful of which opposed the bill. Given leave again for its second and third readings to be taken together, 4 hours of debate on Wednesday ended with National, New Zealand First, ACT, United Future and 26 Labour MPs in favour of it, while the Green Party, Māori Party and 6 Labour MPs voted against it. Now back to the committee rooms with Rhys Lyon.
On Thursday, the Justice and Electoral Committee's inquiry into the 2014 election saw Electoral Commission Chairman Sir Hugh Williams lament the declining rate of electoral enrolment by young New Zealanders. Labelling the downward trend in enrolment and voting as a major concern, Sir Hugh warned of the long-term effects of declining youth enrolment rates.
In time, as those persons become parents themselves, the likelihood is that they won't inculcate enrolment and voting habits in their children, because it's clearly established by the international research that if parents don't vote, it raises the likelihood that their children won't vote.
Sir Hugh was also concerned about the reasons people gave for not voting.
A lot of the reasons given for people not voting are just plainly illogical, but crucially, 27% of the people who didn't vote said they didn't vote because they had lacked any interest in voting. We think that's deplorable. 11% didn't vote because they said they didn't know how to vote or who to vote for. We think that too is most unfortunate. That means 38% of the non-voting public simply were disengaged.
However, Sir Hugh was sceptical about calls for automatic voter registration.
Enrolment should be one of the rites of passage for young New Zealanders as they become adult, just like getting a driver's licence or something like that. But would New Zealanders wear compulsory voting? And I suspect there would be quite a bit of drawback from that position.
The Electoral Commission Chairman appealed to the committee to help address the problem of declining enrolment and electoral participation.
Those are indicators of a serious threat to democracy, and that underpins our suggestion that the committee should recommend that Parliament adopts a nationwide national strategy to try and improve enrolment and voting and participation in the democratic process generally.
Electoral Commission Chairman Sir Hugh Williams giving evidence to the Justice and Electoral Committee's inquiry into the 2014 election. Also this week, the Health Committee called for submissions on a petition in the name of former Labour MP Marion Street, calling on Parliament to investigate public attitudes towards euthanasia. For more on how to make a submission on that and other business before the House, check out our website, parliamenttoday.co.nz, and click on Make Submission at the top of the page.
That report from Rhys Lyon. I'm Tom Frewen, and this programme was made with funding from Parliament.